You know, there's a couple things here. When Channing Frye, can I'm gonna throw an audible at you here for a second here, Owen. I want to ask, you know, would you guys just rather maybe keep the core four? Would you maybe just rather do something like that? Now let me throw this out there though. Here's Channing Frye on his pod, that's our other buddy, it's the Road Tripping podcast, where he talks about Jared Allen, and there's some strong language in here from former Cavalier Channing Frye about one Jared Allen.
Jared Allen is not a playoff big man. He is not physically dominant. He is not aggressive. Is he a good dude? Absolutely. Is he a great regular season all-star caliber player? Absolutely. Do you know what bothered me the most about that series? Do you ever watch the film on when DeAndre Hunter got hit in his stomach and everyone ran over him? Mm-hmm. Do you ever watch when there's a little scuffle where he is at all times? At some point, as the main dude, the biggest dude on your team, you got to f*** somebody up once in a while. He is a great NBA player. If you want to win a chip, no other big man respects him. Miles Turner was whooping his ass. Pascal Siakam was going at him. You look at that Knicks series 3 years ago, they were dogging him out. I don't care what he works on this summer. He got to work on this and this. Keep yourself in shape. Keep the fro tight. Work on those two things because you're being exposed now as soft.
So I like these guys because I feel that they are more obviously sympathetic to the plight of the Cleveland Cavalier fan and the Cleveland fan in general. I think that they've certainly got to know the fan base over the last several years. I don't know if I've heard this type of stuff, and maybe I've missed an episode or two. I don't know if I've heard this type of language thrown at Jared Allen in the past. And so it makes me think, like, while Kobe Altman said what he said yesterday in his press conference, hey, you know, we're going to learn from this and we're going to get better, and the things that you have to say, makes me wonder if Channing Frye and Richard Jefferson, who was also very strongly worded throughout this podcast here, this last episode they had, makes me wonder if they know something's going to happen. Like, something's going to happen here. Like, if you're willing to take the gloves off fully, maybe that's it. Maybe finally that's it, and something's going to happen with somebody here. And if their point, he could very just be that much strong, like wanting Jared Allen to get his act together in the postseason, because, hey, this is three postseasons in a row. We've been pretty disappointed in the man, frankly. He might be begging for something like that to happen, but, man, to say those type of things about Miles Turner whooping his ass, quote-unquote, that's strong, and it makes me wonder, does he know something's going to happen here? Maybe. I don't know. It's just a theory. I'm running with the theory, Tone.
Well,
that's all.
We have had one central question about the Cavs since they brought in Donovan Mitchell, and it's, you know, the two guards and the two bigs. And we've tried to play basketball a little differently than everybody else. Ironically, you're seeing other teams also kind of reinvent what we know about successful teams in the NBA, like the Pacers. No team would have tried to emulate what the Pacers have done to get to back-to-back Eastern Conference finals. Minnesota has got a very interesting, where they have a small guard. I mean, Mike Conley, a small guard who gets picked on just like Darius Garland, right? And then they have a Rudy Gobert, who just a few years ago was getting run right off the floor in a playoff series. And now they could be going to the NBA Finals. They can beat Oklahoma City. So all these teams kind of have a unique look. And so I've got to catch myself in not talking about the NBA playoffs the same way that maybe I've talked about it, or what constitutes a championship team. So I want to make sure, like Kobe Altman yesterday in his press conference was basically like, never say never. Like, you know, different championship teams can be built different ways. And looking at these final four teams, he'd be right. The question is, can the Cavs, as they are built, is that a team that can get through? Because Indiana's nothing like the Knicks team we got bounced a few years ago, and certainly nothing like the Orlando team that got, maybe you could say, well, there's some physical traits that are similar. But there really is no commonality in all these teams that have eliminated us. We've just seemed to lose to different types of teams every year.
Yeah, that's been kind of the problem that I think people have had here. And if you run it back, this is going to be a label here that you're going to have to fight all year long. And here's Kobe Altman about that label, about being a good regular season team.
The narrative is going to be the narrative. People are going to write what they're going to write. We have to change that. That's on us. And the only way to do that is win. We have to live in that space. We have to own that space. And we have to create our own narrative.
And the problem with all that is he's right. But the problem with all that is you can't prove any of that until next postseason. Because you could win 65 games this year and people are not going to care.
Who said they could go 82-0?
If you run
back, it doesn't matter.
I forget who the hell it was, but they were right.
It was Donovan Mitchell.
Oh, jeez.
Was it Donovan?
Yes.
Okay. He's right. He's totally right. If you run this back.
You can't get mad. You guys cannot get mad when the talking heads are going to doubt the team all next year. If you're a big believer in the core four and you're like, no, we're going to be fine. The East is wide open next year with Boston taking a step back, potentially Milwaukee trading Giannis to the Western Conference. You're looking at the Philadelphia 76ers nobody believes in.
Yeah.
Just the same way nobody believes in the Cavs in the playoffs because of Embiid and the injury stuff. And will they have Paul George? Will they be making a trade? The Knicks and the Pacers seem like now they're ahead of you, but in the regular season, feels like the Cavs can win more games than those teams just based on how they're built. But you just can't get mad. If you're a big advocate of running it back, you can't get mad that nobody's going to believe in you
They have handcuffed me on that argument of getting mad at some of the people, and I'm sure I have, and I'm sure there's receipts of the 2015 Hawks argument. Some of the other great regular season teams that have been thrown in there. I got nothing. Now, I don't want to make a move just to fight that, just to have some zest and to say, all right, let's get excited about the regular season again. Like, I don't want to do that, but I just know you're not going to be able to really prove anything until you get the next postseason. And I think that people look at Jared Allen, and I think it's been the same thing with him and with Darius Garland to some degree. You know, Darius Garland is a tremendously talented player. And if you were going to talk talent versus talent, I think you would obviously put Darius Garland ahead of Jared Allen. And also, I think Jared Allen is an easier tradable piece than what Darius Garland is. You're looking for elite. How do you get elite from, again, a 6'1 guard who does have a strong history of injuries? And not heavy contact injuries, but he's just not of big size. And in a league where you are now looking at 6'7", 6'8", guys who can also shoot the three, who can also go to the post, can take that type of a beating there, it's a weird land for Darius Garland. So even though I think he's more talented than Jared Allen, that's not setting off any alarms. He's also almost impossible to trade as much as people are angry about him. Again, who's going to go after him unless you are a bad team that you're trying to save yourself or a middling team what you're trying to save yourself and you're thinking, hey, this guy, he's going to score a lot of points in games and he's going to win us a lot of regular season games because Darius can do that. Darius can do that. As a number one, I think Darius could take a team that is back end of the lottery and put them in the playoffs. I think that Darius can do that. And maybe there's a general manager out there that can get another team, a third team involved, who can do that. But Jared Allen is the easier piece to trade. And so I don't want it to turn into a pile-on here because, again, I think it's going to be a very difficult thing to move any of these guys. So now I guess I got to rub Jared Allen's nose in it and tell him, hey, this is year three. I don't know when you're going to be able to get out there and actually do what you're supposed to do as an interior player in the NBA. And maybe he just never will, and people think maybe I should just stop even having hope for him.
Well, we had always seen, we knew when we drafted Evan Mobley, if Evan Mobley is on the curve that we want him to be, and it feels like, after 4 years, Evan Mobley seems like he's ready to take off, right? In fact, I think if he would have got the ball more in the Pacers series, I think we might have seen that. We might have seen him take off in a big way. I mean, the shot attempts just weren't there for him in a series where nobody could guard him. So I had a problem fundamentally with that. And is that part of the issue with the construct of this team that you do have two guards that want to get up a lot of shots? As I told you, I wasn't happy that Darius, with his injury situation, I was proud that he played and gutted it out those last few games. I thought that showed some toughness.
I think that's what he was trying to do.
And you know what? I think that did prove something to a lot of people. At the same time, he wasn't right. Why was he taking more shots than Evan Mobley in that game? But we've always known with the two guards set up and then with another center playing next to him, another big man, it's a little clunky in terms of fit. So how do you free that up?
Was he taking more shots because he was trying to prove to some of the people that he's tough enough to play? Because that's going to be, you can press too much about this sort of thing, man. But I do believe you can get tougher. I don't know what you learned to get tougher, but I believe you can get tougher. Usually that comes with embarrassment. Usually that comes with you tired of being told what you are, you tired of being made fun of, and you stepping up and defending yourself. That's what it's supposed to be about. Because I can't guarantee that they're able to make a move, and I don't want to just make a move to just make a move. I'm not just going to fire up some trade machine.
Nobody wants to do that.
Adam Schefter a little bit ago says that sources vote to allow NFL players because they're having another owners meeting today. The source to allow NFL players to participate in flag football for the first time during the 2028 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles is expected to pass at today's league meeting in Minneapolis. Nothing is official yet, but as one source says about today's vote, quote, Olympics should be easy. You want your players playing in the Olympics and flag football?
I'd love to see it, but I wouldn't want our players playing in it, no. So that's the catch-22, obviously. They're trying to expand.
If you're coming off 3-14, do you care?
Oh, well, it depends. Does Myles Garrett want to play in this?
Remember, he hurt his toe in the games. Yeah.
Can teams cap out who? Can they go, you're a top 30 guy on our roster, you can't go?
No, remember LeBron. I mean, LeBron is the biggest thing to any franchise that you've ever had. And he still played
Team
USA.
Yeah, but we know why the Dream Team was brought around, right? Like, we were not winning like we thought we should.
Mm-hmm.
This is flag football. I mean, we should dominate this, even with the guy who's the seventh wide receiver on the team.
You know, that's a hell of a point. It really is I know that it's watched internationally, but this is a very American game. Who competes with? Because now, like, when they do, like, the U-20s or whatever it is now with the kiddos.
Except for last year in Canton when we did not win the U-15 or whatever.
Because they're not playing them. They're not playing them anymore. Right. Like, it's they are playing. They're getting ready for college. They're getting ready. They're doing their 7-on-7s.
IMG right now. They're not playing this.
They do not care about that sort of thing. This is your names out there. But I still even think, even if they didn't want to do it, it's like, all right, guys from the UFL, I think guys from the UFL would be just fine to beat up anybody in Europe.
Well, wouldn't you like if David Bell came to you and said, hey, I think it'd be great for my rehab because he'll probably be hurt that offseason.
I think it'd be terrible for his rehab because I just think he'd get hurt again playing flag football.
Go get some routes in.
All right, so
we could send Watson. He'll still be on contract.
Oh,
here we go.
That's our representative.
You want to talk about a great American story.
Now, sir.
Deshaun Watson battling back from injury and scandal to reclaim glory, draped in the red, white, and blue of the American flag, listening to our national anthem after a gold medal. USA! USA!
USA!
Come on. Are you kidding me? That's green light the movie right now. That's what a redemption story, okay. Unlike any other. So much like 3-on-3 basketball and every other Olympic sport outside of a few, very highly specialized type of thing. Like, do we even know, would NFL players necessarily make up the best flag football players?
I don't think they would.
Would there be players from other sports that might actually be better at flag football than NFL players?
You remember that time?
Jimmer Fredette is the best 3-on-3 player.
You know what? That's a great point, because you remember that time, there's that video, I think it's still on YouTube, like LeBron had Kevin Durant and a bunch of other players and like the practice, indoor practice facility at Akron, and they played flag football. And it was Hail Mary. They were running as fast as you've ever seen guys run. And I'm thinking, good God almighty, this is pretty incredible. Yeah, I think you get NBA players who would probably beat other teams,
This is the thing. I don't know anything about this sport. I haven't seen it at a high level. So was Brian Hoyer trying to do flag football?
The highest level of flag football I've still seen is in this country. So I see it all over my Instagram.
Okay.
I see it all, and I see guys.
So I see the women,
by the way,
right now.
You guys talk about some of the hits you see on like a Friday night or in the NFL. Holy geez.
Oh, the men's league flag football.
You should see. I see guys, like these guys. I'm like, I'm surprised some of these guys have a head.
They are like, built, I see like this tanks. Stuff.
I got a buddy who plays. His name's Lavelle, and I mean, they play. And I, like, some of the videos I've seen, like, there's almost near decapitations.
So they're not wearing any protective gear.
No. And it's just, if you go across the middle. If you're willing to just break your body on somebody to go across the middle to get the flag, because if you're just getting the flag, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And that means that you're doing shoulders and all that stuff. And no one's, I mean, this is, It's basically no blood, no foul. Like, if you're just laying there, they ain't going to throw a flag on that. Like, the highlights I see.
See,
like, it looks rough.
So in the Olympics, there's just certain sports that I don't really know if they're the best in the world. Like dressage. Like, are those, could other people in other walks of life be better at dressage?
Well, explain dressage.
You have those dressage prodigies that don't go out for the Olympics because they're too busy.
Dressage is the horse dancing.
They get on the horse and they do these stylized movements.
Yes. I don't know. I would imagine that there's some people in Belgium.
Who do they interview after the dressaging?
Yeah, it's never the horse. So that's what I'm saying. I don't know anything about it. Can somebody who knows something about flag football tell us who would make for the best flag football players in the country?
That 3-on-3 team, the Jimmer Fredette team, is an actual team they have a league and they all play together, so they're all used to it. I don't know if will there become bigger flag leagues?
Yeah, like if you just
put... And then we send the all-star team from that?
If you put... This helps the comparison. If you just put...
All right, flag players, 216-474-0092.
If you put LeBron James in his prime on the 3-on-3 basketball team, would they win every time? Or no, it's a totally different game and maybe LeBron would work against them because he's too big and he can't sprint back to the three-point line and when they have to clear it, you know, and all that stuff. So flag football... Patrick Mahomes, having Patrick Mahomes, does that guarantee you all the championships? Or is there a world where Patrick Mahomes isn't that good at flag football?
I don't think there's a world where Patrick Mahomes isn't good at any sort of football whatsoever. I punt, pass, and kick, I bet he's probably pretty amazing. Oh, he's got the throwing part down. I don't know about that. Is there anything? I can't imagine full-grown NFL football players have a problem with or can't play flag football. Like, can't. Playing it's one thing, whether or not you want them to play it or one thing, that's one. I'm talking about actually playing it well.
Is the biggest goal in flag football elusiveness?
Yes.
Even more so than anything else. So like Allen Iverson in his athletic prime, would he have been, because he was an amazing high school football player.
There's some coaches that tell you he was the best high school football player they ever saw.
So that's what true. I mean. How would you identify who would be the best at this?
You'd have a hula hoop contest.
Okay.
That's going to be an Olympic sport before you know.
You're probably looking at a lot of guys. Guys, don't get mad at me. I don't know much about this. You're looking at a lot of guys who probably are 6'1", 6'2", do you need...
Yeah, height doesn't help you,
right? Do you need big, burly offensive linemen in flag football?
I don't think so.
Okay. So you don't need that. I'm looking at probably 6'1", 6'2". Guys who are the size of Allen Iverson.
I mean, Johnny Manziel, would he make for an elite flag football player
shape?
Right, but in his athletic prime, would Johnny football?
Hell yeah.
Johnny flag football.
Yes.
Did he hold on to the ball too long?
Yes. Well, I mean, he did, but...
I think that's part of the game, though.
Yes, he would
holding
be.
Holding on to the football.
That's timed out, though. I think you got to get rid
of it. Oh, you can't say, I don't know the rules.
You got to get rid of it in a certain time.
You can't just take off?
Every flag game, we used to play a ton when my oldest boy was into football. We played, for 6 months out of the year, and then 6 months of tackle.
See, when we played flag, when my kids played, it was just coaches were making it up as
this
the game
was
went
passing
on.
League. Like there was no. These were passing leagues. Once they got to a certain age, it was 5-on-5, and you weren't allowed to run the ball.
Okay.
So it was like quarterback has 4 seconds to get rid of it.
And then they gave the ball to Axel once, and he ran with the ball like he was a cop breaking down a door with one of them battering ram things. Battering ram Axel. Ryan in Painesville. Ryan, hello.
Hey, morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing well, Ryan. Go ahead.
Don't have much to say, but I know you guys are talking about the flag football thing, and like most adults, I've played it, and I've played with a few NFL players. Most recently was Kareem. And
congratulations on all your success.
You played with Kareem Hunt?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about on the flag football.
Yeah, I know. I mean, was he good?
So we were in a tournament, and it was right before he was going from the draft. And I remember him saying, like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to take this too seriously. I have bigger things ahead of me. And we're like, okay, cool. And, I mean, it ain't even close. I mean, the quickness, they would just hand him the ball. Like, the quarterback just run right back and hand him the ball. And he just made – it was I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was like 11-on-11, and he made like everybody would miss, and then he would break it from like 70 yards. Like we would catch him, but it wasn't even close.
when you are on the field with someone truly special, I don't care if it's flag football, real football. I don't care if it's a different sport. It is a really – Ryan, thank you for the call. It is a really cool thing.
Yeah, like I think Stephen Kwan would be really good at this, right? He's a great athlete.
Yeah.
Jose would be good at this. They're good athletes.
Boy, that's a hell of a point.
Jerome Bettis, I don't know if you want to just hand him the ball and let him run up the middle.
He ain't running anybody
else. He's also like 50 right now.
Boy, we should kick everyone's ass in 2028. That's true. Okay, one more. Adam in Akron. Hello.
Hey, guys. So, yeah, former adult flag football player. I'll say the ideal people to have out there would be NFL players because there's a lot of so many similarities to how you have to run your offense and your defense as far as route running, as far as precision, as far as pressure on the quarterback, playing defense. I played defensively, how you're defending the wide receivers. Like, you need to really be precise in doing all of those things. So just being an athlete really isn't enough.
Okay, but what about size, Adam? Does it mitigate what size? Because obviously in the NFL, you want guys that have that size and speed. Can you do away with
it? Like a wide receiver, they're still going to try and, you know, throw up the ball in the end zone and, you know, have the bigger wide receiver, you know, just jump over and get it. So in those scenarios, yes, of course, traditionally your bigger guys were wide receivers and your smaller guys were in the secondary. But the skill set still, speed is going to be one of the biggest factors. But you got to be able to, well, just like Ken said the other day, you got to be able to run across the middle and be able to catch the ball and still know what's coming. All of those things play in a factor. So I just think NFL guys would be a lot better than anybody else, even just from a knowledge standpoint. Athleticism means a lot, but just the sheer just knowledge of how to do what you're doing.
I will tell you this, and thank you very much for the call, Adam. Like, you guys who are adult flag football players, dead ass, dead serious. I bet we will have, in 2028, there will be a conversation that some guys, guys like us will be hesitant to let some of these guys play. Because I think you guys are going to see some. Because I'm telling you, the highlights that you see on Instagram and stuff, like I used to think the guys who played like semi-pro football with equipment on, I'm like, what? There's no insurance? Are you nuts? And then I saw some of the stuff about flag. I saw the flag football highlights and guys, again, nearly getting their head taken off. I go, that's insane. By the way, we might be saying goodbye to a fan favorite here. I almost said a flag favorite here. Ty Jerome could be on his way out after Kobe Altman's comments. Is that your contention here?
Boy, it definitely seemed like the way Kobe referred to him, talked about him, almost like he, because he is a free agent now, and he's an unrestricted free agent. It definitely sounded like the beginning of the parting of ways. After what was a special, special regular season.
It was a great
and a good Miami series.
It was a great, well, the Miami series, I think people look differently at the Miami series now. And it's weird because I fought that fight about him and Darius Garland with the fans because of the Miami series. But I think we just look at, I don't think people care about the Miami series. I think people think the Miami series was a detriment. Like if you would have played Detroit, you would have had a fight probably on the floor at some point or a shoving match on the floor at some point. Would Detroit better prepare you for the Indiana Pacers? Yep. Like I think that's the way people look at it now. Like, and remember, that's 2 years. You tried to do what you did in the season finale at home. Against who did they play? Were they
the Pacers?
The Pacers, and then they got that one where they wanted to play the Orlando Magic. All right, you got the Magic, and you got 7 games out of them, and then you had this where the back and forth and everything, and then you get to play the Heat. Hey, that's great. You get to sweep them in 4 games. Everybody feels good, but I think a lot of people look at it and like, well, that didn't help you now, and I don't think the worm has turned yet. I don't think it's going to happen until maybe the end of the season. Where people might be like, all right, we really want to bring Ty Jerome back. I think some people got some bad taste in their mouths about him, about Merrill, certainly about Darius and about Jared Allen. Like, I think that carries in. So if there's any sort of a leaving of Ty Jerome, I think a lot of people changed their tune here over this last series against Indiana and wanting guys who they believe are going to be. And I think Ty Jerome's a fine player. He'll probably only get better. But as of right now, I think they're only interested in guys that they think are tough for the postseason. Like, I bet they might be watching this Knicks-Pacers series, which starts tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Yes.
8:30.
They're going to be watching that Knicks-Pacers series and like, hey, is this guy a free agent? Is there any moves that could be made here? Because they just want to instill, can we trade for the, like, can there any moves that can be made to instill for toughness? Can we get a player like X is what they're going to say. Who's that player? Browns football. Well, you know, Anthony, I just want to talk Browns football. That's all I want to do.
Why not?
I mean, all you naysayers out there. Well, we got a guy who can, oh, hell yeah, talk some Browns football with us. Ladies and gentlemen, at Joel Batonio on Twitter. I'm sure he checks it often. Browns All-Pro guard Joel Batonio joins us right now. By the way, it's 7:45 and 26 seconds for everybody who thinks that this is recorded. This is live, dead live. Joel joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Ladies and gentlemen, the great Joel Batonio. Joel, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, I had to make sure I was on time, you know, early morning call, but I'm up and ready to go.
First off, I want to start with something fun, and then I'll get into some of the other stuff, and then we'll finish with something fun. The Cleats for a Cause experience from a kid again. I see the event here where people can go. They can, I believe that they can bid on this experience, or get raffle tickets, I should say, for akidagain.org. Tell us about how you got hooked up with them.
Yeah, so a few years ago, it was random. Like, an acquaintance of mine just like kind of said, hey, I think this is something that you might be interested in. So I talked to him. We had a couple little chats, and it's really, you know, I mean, it's obviously like a tough cause, but it's they do so good things. Like they work with kids, you know, with families that are raising kids with life-threatening conditions, which is obviously tough, but they put these adventures on. So, you know, we went to Scene 75 earlier this offseason. You know, they go to the amusement parks. They do all these things for these families, and it's the whole family, brothers, sisters, parents, everybody gets involved and they do these adventures together. So everybody who's going through kind of similar experiences get to do them together and they put them on. And so that's what we're raising money for. Like, you know, we want to do as many adventures as possible. So it's $50 a ticket, but you know, you have the ability to win, cause my cleats that I did this year, which are a kid again cleats that I, signed. And then there's going to be a meet and greet plus six tickets at a Browns training camp practice year. And then a, custom bottle of, Maker's Mark kid again. So it's a great cause. You're helping out these families and they have a chance to you know, have some normalcy in their life.
That's an awesome cause, Joel. Very, very cool. It's great to see players, you know, right here in Northeast Ohio doing what they can to help out in the community. You've always been a stand-up guy in that regard. So I'm looking back at your draft class when you came into the league, and the reason I'm looking is because at the end of last year, we didn't know if Joel Batonio would be back. You know, one of the all-time offensive linemen in the history of the Cleveland Browns. You know, we've been pushing for you to get some Hall of Fame pub, and here we are. We didn't know if you would be coming back. What made the difference? How much did you truly look going into the offseason at the pros and cons of all of it?
Yeah, it was a big decision. You know, we obviously struggled the end of last year. You know, all of last year really was not what we wanted. And so I sat down with my wife and my family and was just kind of like, what are we doing this for? You know, like at what moment, you know, is enough? And by the end of the year, I was very frustrated. So we sat down for a few weeks and I was just like, I don't know if I want to, you know, do this anymore. And then, you know, I sat at home for a couple weeks and I thought to myself and I was like, man, I don't want to go out like that. Like, I could still play football at this level, you know? So I made sure, you know, my knee, my back, all my little injuries that bothered me throughout the year, you know, I got those checked out, made sure we were on a good page of, hey, how much worse can we make these things and all that stuff. And I just realized, like, I don't want to be done. I got a whole lifetime to be done playing football, and I still have some left in the tank. So I wanted to go out there and, you know, give it another go and kind of see where we're at. And I do have faith. You know, I talked to the new coaches before I made the decision, Coach Bloom you know, and these guys that are going to coach the line and kind of help put in this offense, Tommy Rees. And I felt a lot more comfortable with what we were planning on doing, kind of going back to that 2020, 2021 vibe of, you know, run the ball, play action off the run, marriage of the run and pass, all these things that made it successful, play great defense, you know, ball control. And it got me excited. And I was like, you know, I still have some time left on this body, and I'm ready to play a little bit more football.
Well, Joel, that's pretty amazing. I'm sorry, Tone, but like you've played that. How many years will this be this season for you? I lost count. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is my 12th year.
So, I mean, you've played for some really good coaches, and you've played for some goofballs, and you went to them and go, wait a minute, you're going to have to not convince you, but you just wanted to make sure you weren't playing for, you weren't going to waste your time out there this year is what it sounds like.
Yeah, correct. And you know, I'm not going to lie to you. No, like I knew the master plan of who we were drafting. I didn't know any of that stuff. You know, I asked, you know, and I waited till who we hired as an offensive coordinator, who we hired as an O-line coach. You know, I knew the basis plan that they wanted to bring a vet quarterback in. They wanted to draft a quarterback, you know, things like that, where it's like, yes, this is our plan. And we want to try and compete, you know, out there. And so it was enough to be like, and honestly, I've been in battle with Coach Stefanski now going on 5 years, and I see what type of coach he is. And I have ultimate faith in him that he's going to put, you know, the best product on the field. And I was ready to still be a part of that.
Joel Bitonio with us on the hotline. How did you watch the draft this year? I always wonder about the vets because I had an infamous situation where I was in an event 1 year with a Browns player, and he was watching the draft, and when he saw who they took, he said, well, I guess I'm not going to be a Cleveland Brown anymore. Obviously,
Did he leave the event?
Yes, yeah. That he was paid to be at. So you obviously are not in that same predicament, but just as a veteran, as someone who loves the game and loves the sport, did you watch it? Are you entertained by it, or can you be jaded by it at the same time?
So I used to be way more dialed in. Like early in my career, you're like, oh my gosh, like who are they drafting? Like you said, you wonder what position they're drafting and stuff. As my career's gone on, I've paid less and less attention. You're always excited though to see who you draft, and then you have a top pick this year, and you kind of want to know what's happening. And I was actually in Florida on spring break with the kids, so I'm pretty sure I put the kids down and we just had it on in the hotel room, you know, just kind of seeing what would happen. My agent, he happens to represent Mason Graham, so I kind of got a tip off like a little bit before it happened that they were going after this guy. And then, so I watched the first day just to kind of see what happened. And then, honestly, the next 2 days, it was more like, all right, like you get a phone update, you know, like, oh, we drafted so-and-so or this. So not quite as in tune as I used to be, but the first round I like to have on because it's just, I don't know, it's, as a fan of the game of football, it's always fun to watch a little bit.
Joel Bitonio, Browns guard. He joins us for Cleats for a Cause, the possible experience that you can win by purchasing a raffle ticket at akidagain.org. We'll get back into that coming up here in a little bit. Joel, you try to establish an identity every year. Have you began to edge out what you think might be an identity for this football team in 2025, or is that something you'll try to figure out as you get closer to camp?
Well, no, being here at the offseason program, you know, we actually – went over what the offense identity, what the defensive identity, and what the special teams identity was yesterday in our team meeting, which it's easy to put on paper, you know, but we're trying to develop that as a group and an offense. Like I said, we want to be multiple. We want to, you know, marriage of the run and pass. We want to be physical. We want to play fast, not necessarily like up-tempo all the time, but break the huddle, get to the line, fast motions, you know, all these things that an efficient offense does. And just not hurt ourselves. I mean, it stinks because we've been very bad at it, but Kevin has always stressed, don't turn the ball over. You know, take the ball away on defense, don't turn the ball away on offense, and I think we want to do that this year. Like, we think we have the defensive players to play great defense, and if we can control the ball on offense and take advantage of those big plays when we have them, like, we think we can get back some of that magic, you know, from 2023.
Well, you mentioned 2023, but you've certainly been there on the line for some of the best rushing offenses in the NFL. And you, obviously, in taking the turnovers out of the equation as best you can, and the fact that they took two running backs, you know, in this draft, do you get excited about that as an offensive lineman and maybe taking on an identity that you guys had excelled at in the past?
Yeah, I think CSO line, you know, what they're most excited for, it's that, you know, you look up cut-ups in the offseason of, like, the plays you're installing. It's such a refresh, you know. You look at, like, oh, this is, you know, our outside zone left and all this stuff. And a lot of the plays, they flash back, you know, 2020, 2021, 2022, like 2023. There's plays from, you know, the last 4 years that we've been doing this, and it's like, all right, this is what we, you know, not really signed up for, but as an O-lineman, this is what we signed up for. We're, you know, going to run outside zone. We're going to run the ball, cut guys on the backside, you know, big play actions off these runs where the defense is tired. Like, that's what an O-line dreams of. And I came into this league, you know, with Coach Shanahan running that offense. And so for me, it just feels like that feels right. That feels what, you know, offensive football is. And so, especially linemen, man. I know it's a passing league. I know teams like to pass, but I loved it this year that a lot of the teams that were in the playoffs that were making these runs were really running the ball. Like, even the Chiefs, the Bills, like, the Bills in the playoffs had a drive with, you know, 12, 13 runs in a row. Like, teams that were, you know, putting these smaller guys on the field to defend the pass, teams were like, oh, we got to run the ball at these guys to make them tackle and see what they can do.
Joel Bitonio joining us on the show. All right, one more football one, and then I want to talk about a kid again with you. You got four quarterbacks there. I mean, technically five, but you got multiple quarterbacks. What is the challenge for you, and you've been through this before, leading a locker room with maybe different QBs competing for a job? You have different people, different ages, different walks of life who like different guys. How do you try to get that together?
Yeah, I mean, the hope is one guy comes out on top. You know what I mean? Like, whoever mm-hmm. whoever that is comes out on top and takes the reign. The quarterback's such an important position. Whoever is named that starter, you know, whatever it is, gets just the ultimate respect from the locker room, really, no matter what, because we know how important that position is. And truly, the vets we have here, you know, with Kenny and Joe, like, they're such seasoned vets and just so, like, football guys that I think they're going to make it a lot easier to work with four quarterbacks. And Coach Stefanski has done a great job in the past of giving these opportunity periods to younger quarterbacks and younger guys. You know, if I'm Dylan or Shador, like, I'm getting to Joe Flacco's back pocket and just being like, hey, like, you've played, I don't know, 18 years in this league. Like, how do you make it work, you know, and just trying to figure that stuff out. But like you said, it's going to be a competition. And I think the team wants the best guy on the field. And that's as simple as that. Like, guys want to win. And so whoever the best guy ends up being, like, he will kind of step into that leadership role and that leading role for the team. But I think it's going to be a fun competition. I think the guys are prepared to work. And from what I've seen, everybody's, you know, picking up the playbook and trying to be, you know, the best quarterback they can possibly be.
All right, Joel, real quick again, where can people find the raffle tickets?
Yeah, akidagain.org. You can go to my Instagram, which I don't really post much, but I have a link in my bio on there. Akidagain Northeast Ohio, also on their Instagram. There's a link in the bio. But it's truly a great cause. These families obviously are going through a lot, and any support helps. So I appreciate you guys giving me a shout-out, and happy to join you guys.
Can't thank you enough for the time, my friend. All the best.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Joel Bitonio on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Interesting thing what he brought up, where I'm not just shouting into the wind there about the actual Browns.